Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Hello and welcome to the Heredity Podcast with me, Dr. James Bergen. As December closes in and the streets outside my home become increasingly icy, I'm being harshly reminded of how poorly adapted I am to the cold. However, the cold is where some species thrive, and few embrace it quite as much as the emperor penguin. And in today's episode, we're going to explore how they manage to live in one of the world's most inhospitable environments, as we hear from two of the authors behind the recent Heredity paper, Selection-Driven Adaptation to the Extreme Antarctic Environment in the Emperor Penguin. This is the last episode of the year, so I hope you enjoy it, and we'll see you again in 2023. Can you both please introduce yourselves?
So my name is Emiliano Trucchi, and I define myself as a population geneticist, so I study population genetics. I'm currently based in Italy, Marche Polytechnic University. Yeah, I'm an associate professor at the moment. And I have a small group of researchers, and one of my biggest projects, my most important project, is on penguins, with collaborating with Céline Leboeck.
So yeah, I'm Céline Leboeck. So I'm a researcher in ecology of seabirds at the National Scientific Center of France and Monaco. So I'm based in France, Strasbourg, and in Monaco. I'm interested in, I would say, understanding polar ecosystems in general and their evolution. So that's why I'm working with Emiliano Trucchi, and especially particularly in face of global changes. And I would say that another objective of my research is actually to provide results and tools essential to the implementation of a strategy of preservation of the sensitive ecosystem, fragile ecosystem and biodiversity of polar regions. And so to do so, actually, we are using seabirds from polar regions, so subantarctic and Antarctic ecosystems, and especially penguins, as they are very good bioindicators, sentinels of their ecosystem, of what is happening in their ecosystem, that if you long-term monitor them, you will know more or less what is happening in your ecosystem and if your ecosystem is in good health or not.
Well, thank you both very much for joining me on the podcast. And as you both kind of mentioned there, this paper is on penguins. And just to start off, I wonder why emperor penguins are so interesting.
I have a bit different perspective than Céline. So I'm also interested in conservation of species, biodiversity, and penguins too. The only difference is that I'm more focused on fundamental questions in evolution. So I'm also interested in understanding how evolution happened, actually. And this is what this paper is about. Emperor penguins are peculiar. They are unique, I would say, because they are the most cold-adapted, warm-blooded vertebrate on Earth. So they can live in a very crazy place with crazy cold temperatures, crazy winds, and so on. But they can thrive there. They can breed in the winter, in the Antarctic winter. We all know that from the movies and the documentaries that we have seen. And they are special for this adaptation. These are special adaptation to cold temperatures, to thriving in a very unique condition. So you need to keep your core temperature stable across the whole winter, just incubating the egg and rearing the chick for 4 or 5 months. The males actually can stand the winter and do this egg incubation and chick rearing without eating. So fasting for up to 4 months, actually. This implies reshuffling and remodulating the metabolism to such a level that is really, really different from any other animals that we know.
Just to complete with what Emiliano was saying, so emperor penguins are clearly amazing animals in terms of adaptation. As you said, actually, they are one of the most cold adapted animals on Earth, facing temperature lower than minus 40 degrees Celsius and very strong winds reaching 300 kilometers per hour while breeding during the dark Antarctic winter around the Antarctic continent. And so actually to do so, they were able to develop amazing feature to be ultra efficient in terms of insulation, heat production, and energy management, as Emiliano was saying. So in terms of adaptation, for instance, you have a compact body. So in terms of surface and volume, for instance, they have very specialized feathers and down to keep warm. They have a thick to gather enough food to have a thick layer of fat while starting to breed, with a very efficient process, I will say, of fasting also. So they are really powerful fasters. And also in terms of behaviors, they have a very special behavior. Everybody knows their famous adults, this social thermoregulatory collective group behavior that generates temperature up to 37.5 degrees inside the adult, while outside you are at minus 40, 50 degrees sometimes. So it's just amazing adaptation in terms of behavior too. And as Emiliano was saying, actually, thanks to this adaptation, males are able to fast for more than 4 months, and they will lose something like 20, 25 kilograms during this long fasting and incubating period. And in addition, they will be able to, after 4 months, feed their newly born chicks with what we call crop milk. So it's a very rich protein and lipid content, liquid, and waiting for their female to return from the sea. So actually, it's just, yeah, completely amazing. So this is an adaptation, you know, against the cold. But they have also amazing adaptation in terms of, for instance, foraging. So as you know, probably the emperor penguins are able to dive deeper than 500 meters depth. And they are doing apnea of almost 20 minutes. And they are traveling 1,000 kilometers per year. Also, in terms of just diving, they are ultra efficient. So, yeah.
Amazing. I mean, I was going to ask why this area of research fascinates you, but I guess it's pretty obvious after that series of incredible facts about their adaptation. Yeah. So, I mean, they sound like incredible animals. So what was it in the study in particular that you set out to do? Like, what were your aims?
So we were actually interested in understanding the underlying genetics of all of these adaptations. Yeah, this is the main question, the main scope. When you study evolutionary biology, actually identifying the signature of natural selection shaping adaptations, it's very difficult. It's not a trivial task. So selection is one of the most important forces shaping the evolution of the life on Earth. Yet it's so difficult to find the signature of that. So we can only find signature when it's very extreme in the genome, when this signature is very clear. So we set up bioinformatic experiment. So we set up a comparison. So we have these two species, the king and the emperor penguin. The king is the other large penguin. They are sister species. Their divergence is not that old. In evolutionary times, we can say it's recent. It's a recent divergence between the two species. So it's still 1 million, 2 million years, but for us it's recent. Okay. So in this recent divergence, they diverged phenotypically, but also ecologically. So now they are two different species with two different ecology. The king penguin is thriving in these subantarctic islands that are around the Antarctic continent at a very different ecological conditions, different temperatures, around 0 degrees or more than 0 degrees. So it's a completely different setup. So our question was, okay, so they diverge, they are different. And so we can use this contrast to try to understand where in the genome, or actually in this case, in this paper, we analyze just the genes, which gene is actually diverging the most between the two of them. And not only in terms of the number of mutations they are diverging, but also the way they diverge. So we need to find orthologous genes. So genes that are actually the same in different birds. So we devised a phylogeny with about seven species of penguins and 13 other birds. And we try to find all of the genes that could be aligned across all of these 20 species. So you can imagine that in 20 species, we are talking about a very long evolutionary time. So it's difficult to find the regions that are actually exactly the same. There are lots of gaps in the genes and changes. And so the alignment is very difficult. So you need to trim, to filter, to be sure that you are aligning the right things. So our first question was, what was the ecology of the ancestral species, the king and the emperor? Well, was that more similar to the king, that is less cold adapted, or to the emperor, that is more cold adapted? And so it's okay, if we do this test and we see more changes in the emperor penguin, then the ecology was probably more similar to that of the king penguin. The opposite is true if we see more changes in the king. So we devised this test, and then we did several cross-checks, and not just one test, but yeah, we overlap lots of analysis because there are lots of statistical uncertainty in this test, of course. And so by this overlapping of signals, we could see that actually in all of the tests we made, there was much more pervasive signature of selection in the emperor penguin, supporting the hypothesis that the ancestral ecology was similar to the king penguin, so less cold adapted. So in this case, we say, okay, if the ecology was similar to the king penguin, then the emperor penguin and its adaptation to the cold Antarctic is a derived state. It's something that happened after the divergence. So it's something, so all of this adaptation is actually happening not so long evolutionary time, as we said before, still 1 million years or so, but something quite recent. So we got this signal of clear adaptation to the cold as a derived state. And this was the most important finding. So this answered our first question. And then we had another question saying, okay, we know that there are several other animals or warm-blooded vertebrates that are cold adapted. And we know that some of them are living today, like the polar bear, the Arctic fox, there are lots of birds. And also there were some of these mammals that got extinct long ago, like the mammoth or the woolly rhino. So the second part of our analysis was on the overlapping of signature of selection in genes across all of these cold adapted animals. Because there are other studies that have been done, so we collected the literature and we tried to see and to search for the overlap between the genes that we found with some signature in the emperor penguins in other cold adapted birds, mammals, but also other vertebrates in general. So what we found is that in most of the cases, we got a signature of selection in the same category of genes, let's say cardiovascular functions, fatty acid metabolism, or thyroid hormones. There are some specific classes of genes that can collectively participate to a certain phenotype or certain trait that were modified, okay? But not the same, not exactly the same. So we found signature of selection in 161 genes, and then we compare with long table of genes found in other species, and we found an overlap only for 4 of these genes. So selections is actually using the underlying genetics in different ways to get to similar adaptation. So this is also saying that each adaptation to cold, in this case, is actually unique.
It's a really good summary of your aims and what you did and what you found. And I guess one thing I am really curious about, though, is that obviously, as you're talking there, it's a very heavily bioinformatic project. But obviously, the first step is actually collecting your samples. And Celine, I know you spent some time in Antarctica in this delightful habitat, as you've both described. So what was the experience of being down there in the habitat these penguins live in like?
This is really difficult question, I have to admit. I mean, being over there is just it's just amazing, and you're on another planet. And it's really particular to be on that environment and to be close to this species that you can see just evolved and doing their amazing behavior too. And it's something very, very complicated actually to describe.
Even just hearing you describe where these penguins live and what they've had to adapt to, yeah. I can't even picture it in my mind. Even the sheer like temperature extreme between like the middle of the penguin huddle, yes, and the outside, I can't grasp it.
But yeah, I mean, over there, otherwise, we are quite well equipped thanks to the logistic facilities, I would say, of the Polar Institute. So either the French or the German Polar Institute. And so I would say that we are really in a very nice environment with your, you know, the big down suit. So you are like in a cocoon. So there is no problems, I would say, to be over there and observe them for hours.
Yeah, I mean, it does look like a really stunning environment to try and visit. And I guess kind of, Emiliano, you gave a really good summary of the paper, but I wonder what your key findings were.
So our results support the hypothesis that the emperor penguin, the adaptation to cold is recent in evolutionary times and derived, that the underlying genetics of this adaptation to cold is not acting on the same genes as in other cold adapted species, but on a set of genes that all participate to similar pathways and functions. And so selection is using different tools in the toolkit to get to similar cold adaptation as in emperor penguin or, for example, in the polar bear or the Arctic fox or the woolly mammoth. And then another key finding was that, yeah, we found a signature of selection in four genes that was also found in other animals adapted to cold. And one of these four genes is actually very important. Actually, it was super cool. Yeah, it's weird to say that for a cold adapted species, we found a super cool thing.
We love a pun, though.
So there was one gene that actually made so much sense because it was an ion gated channel. So I don't know, this part is more proteomics. So it was another colleague of mine here at my institute helping on this. But there was this protein that is actually a thermoreceptor for noxious cold. So we don't know exactly what it triggers, but we know that this is a switch saying if the temperature is below this level, it will just start a signal and then the cell, the tissue, the body will do something else. And this specific switch is different in the emperor penguin. And there is a signature selection in this gene. Well, we did this simulation, very complicated simulation of proteins and structural function of this protein. And we found that these mutations are actually in regions of the protein that can have a meaning in changing the efficiency or the structure of this receptor. So actually what we found as a statistically significant result was actually translated into some function. So we could see that there was a function in that change. And that function actually matters in the way this receptor to noxious cold is operating. So the other key message could be this one. So it's very important, and this is what studies on selection are doing at the moment, to move on from statistical significance to actually functional significance. So we have the tools like this simulation or this other bioinformatic approach we can use to test if something is actually changing the function of a protein, beside doing tests in vitro, like in cells or modifying animals like this, because in this case, we are working on a non-model species. This is very important. Non-model species are the vast majority of life on Earth, and they are all unique in the sense that there is not such a model to cold adaptation as this species. And so we need to try to study this with the best tools available without killing any animals or without manipulating them in any way. So it's important to do this kind of analysis from a bioinformatic perspective, but to be able to test the function of these results.
Me, I would say that I have another take or message, more conservation aspect or more linked to environmental changes. And to me, as Emiliano said, most of the molecular pathways at the basis of colonization of polar environments appear as species specific, which means that actually losing each of these unique adapted species corresponds to the loss of a whole evolutionary trajectory, I would say. And for me, the take-home message is actually, unfortunately, this species, the emperor penguin, is a candidate evolutionary cul-de-sac endpoint under the current climate change scenarios that we are facing.
So, I mean, it's kind of interesting what you're saying there, because I think when people think of these very extreme adapted species, the threat of climate change is something that comes into a lot of people's minds. So what is this study telling us about their ability to adapt and survive in that? Are you saying that there isn't a lot of options for the penguins there?
To me, because they are so specialized, to me, they are really at a higher risk condition for extinction when you have environmental changes changing as fast as we are seeing now in the current global warming.
I totally agree. I can also add that we don't have good track record for survival of species adapted to the cold. So if we look at the past, one of the most famous cold adapted mammal, that is the woolly mammoth or the woolly rhino, they got extinct after the glaciation, or they could have been declining before, or they could have been hunted to extinction by humans, or so on and so forth. But for sure, we know that there are no descendants from the cold adapted mammoth or the cold adapted rhino, but the elephants and the rhinos that we see today, that are living today on Earth, they are the descendants or temperate or warm adapted species. So we don't have so many examples, but when it happens that a species gets into the cold adapted state, then seems like what Celine says before is kind of an end point. It's very difficult to revert to some extent, maybe because the pressure of the environment, yeah, the climate is so strong and so different and so unique. They are just like trapped in their evolutionary trajectories.
And also, especially just I would like to add one thing is we are talking about long life species. And also the problem with long life species is you have a turnover, a generation time really slow. And so meaning that the adaptation, microevolutionary adaptation takes time for such a species.
Yeah. The only other thing I wanted to add is that these cold adapted species are a minority with respect to the warm adapted ones. In the same lineage, if we consider, I don't know, any group, we know that cold adaptation is rare. So there could also be this issue with the fact that mammoths are extinct and the ancestral, the elephants are still thriving in the forest because there were more lineages probably. But in any case, I think the history is telling us that probably cold adapted species cannot revert to a warm adaptation. Probably it's also in this case, and yeah, this Celine has a much better perspective on this, is the pace of the climate change. So,
yes.
So we said that for us, evolutionarily speaking, 1 million years to get adapted to the Antarctic was relatively rapid, right? But on the other hand, now we are talking about reverting or the need to revert to a not so cold adapted planet in no time, right? So climate change is really fast in comparison with what species experience, biodiversity experience before this anthropogenic climate change is faster. Yeah, we need to say that.
And another thing also about the emperor penguin, so the species is considered close to being at high risk of extinction in the near future, especially due to the threat of climate change and its consequence on sea ice, actually, because they are really linked to the sea ice for breeding. So this is their breeding habitats, actually. They breed on sea ice, and also they use sea ice in terms of foraging, because actually all the food web is growing under the sea ice. And so any modification of the sea ice and shrinking of the sea ice will have an impact on their feeding and their foraging efficiency, I would say. But also it's not only that, because the emperor penguins is facing other threats that can be also amplified by global warming, of course, for instance, fisheries, like pollution, like pathogens and other type of threat like this. And so when you combine everything, climate change, global warming, plus all these threats, this is probably the tipping point for them. This is problematic for these species.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I guess that's kind of a heavy place to end the episode on, but that is just the kind of world we're living in right now with the climate emergency we're facing. But on the positive, this is a really excellent paper and it has some really cool analyses in it. It is on a very amazing if threatened species as well. So just to finish up, I wonder if you could remind us what your paper is called and also just tell us about anyone else who was involved in bringing us this research.
So the title of this paper is Selection-Driven Adaptation to the Extreme Antarctic Environment in the Emperor Penguin. And this was the main work of a PhD student from the University of Padova, working with me, Federica Pirri, and then Lino Metto from the University of Pavia, contributing a lot to all the analysis for orthologous gene search, and then Silvia Fuselli, contributing to the selection scan, yeah, the selection analysis based on phylogenies, and then two other PhD students, Flavia Fernandez and Lorena Ancona, that are working with me and helped a lot with the analysis. And then there is the group of proteomics contributing to the protein structure analysis, Nunzio Perta and Daniele Di Marino. Then, of course, Lorenzo Zane, University of Padova, co-supervising Federica. And then, of course, Celine Le Boeck and myself as senior author. Maybe I can also acknowledge the funding agency supporting, that is the Italian National Program for Antarctic Research, that contributed with a grant for me.
Perfect. Well, thank you very much, both of you, for joining us and sharing this really fascinating project on these penguins.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for the interview. Bye.
Yeah, it was nice.
You can find the paper discussed today on the Heredity website. That's nature.com/HDY. While you're there, you can also check out how to submit your own papers to the journal. You can subscribe to the Heredity podcast wherever you get your podcasts, and you can follow us on Twitter. That's @HereditityJournal. If you want to get in touch with me directly, drop me an email at hereditypodcast.gen@gmail.com. I'm James Bergen. Thanks for listening.